liking us on Facebook.
Catholic Radio in Metro Detroit. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
A good Catholic is a faithful citizen.
Make America great again!
What's more important here is not saving the country, it's saving your soul.
It's a bold strategy. Let's see if it pays off for us.
Trust in the media has hit its lowest point.
I want the truth!
What is truth?
The age of the passive layperson can't go on.
It's our job to share that love of Christ with you people.
This is an excellent mission, sir, with an extremely valuable objective.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
Al, this is an excellent program.
You have a wonderful show.
I love listening in my car.
That's a great question to start off with.
You are in for a show tonight.
Here we go again.
Right in my face, though. I mean, I don't mind being in my face. I just wanted like you to see me.
And a good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. You know, the Southern Poverty Law Center claims that there are more than 900 active hate groups in the United States. But their definition of hate is so broad that it includes several groups who simply defend religious liberty, biblical concepts of marriage. And it is hard to believe. If you had asked me about this 20 years ago, I would never have imagined it would have reached this point. But a number of these groups are groups that I've worked with over 20 years, 30 years in some cases, and they're being painted with the same brush as neo-Nazis and the KKK. One of the groups on the list is the Ruth Institute, an organization devoted to helping survivors of the sexual revolution. Dr. Jennifer Roback Moore, she's been a frequent guest on this program. And last week, the Institute learned that its credit card processing company, Vanco, has cut off its services because it refuses to associate with groups that promote hate, violence, harassment, and abuse. Well, Dr. Morris will be with us to take a look at this, what amounts to nonsense. But this has been true. We find now the Family Research Council, the American Family Association, and other groups have undergone this hate treatment by the Southern Poverty Law Center. Back in the mid-90s, I noticed that the Southern Poverty Law Center, which had an early reputation as a legitimate civil rights organization, by the mid-90s, it was clear to me that they were becoming awfully elastic in their definition of who counts as an extremist group. And I actually began warning against them at that time. Now, they've just gone from bad to worse. And in the last few months, I've mentioned on this program as well. I know there's still those of you who remember the glories of the Poverty Law Center and have a hard time believing that their criteria has so deteriorated over these years. But it has. And so we're going to be talking about that. But more importantly, we're going to be talking about the importance of helping men and women in the new America deal with the sexual revolution of the old America and its consequences. Many of us have parents who are aging and dying, and they've had a hard time believing that there has been this revolution going on here in the United States. And many of them will go to their grave not quite comprehending how different the world is today than when they were being raised. Many of us who have even passed through the sexual revolution and bear some of its scars and its negative consequences have a hard time believing how different the mainstream ethical situation is compared to what we grew up with. So we're going to be looking at this, not to in any way glamorize the past or to believe that there was some golden age in the past, but it is always good to have a good sense of history so that we can understand what's coming. And so coming up today in this hour, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, founder of the Ruth Institute. I'm Al Cresta, and we'll be back in just a moment here.
Thank you very much, Al. Welcome, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Wednesday, September 6th. Today, we commemorate Blessed Claudia Gonazzo, and today's news is brought to you in part by the Ave Maria Family of Funds at AveMariaFunds.com. Pope Francis is on his way to Colombia for the 20th foreign trip of his pontificate. He left Rome this morning and is scheduled to arrive late this afternoon. Apart from an airport welcoming ceremony, no public events have been scheduled for the first day of the trip, giving the Holy Father time to rest and recover. Tomorrow, he will begin a busy schedule of events with a courtesy call at the Presidential Palace, a visit to the city's cathedral, a meeting with members of the Latin American Bishops Conference, and an outdoor mass at Simon Boulevard. Of our park. Miami-Dade County is getting prepared for the arrival of Hurricane Irma and telling residents to plan ahead.
We don't want you to be caught in a hurricane in your car. That's the worst thing you could do. So if you are planning to do so and leaving by car, please do so, you know, as soon as you can.
Mayor Carlos Jimenez says he has not declared mandatory evacuations yet into certain areas of the county because the storm is slowing. He said it's giving the county more time to determine where Irma will track. Jimenez says there are already 4 shelters for people who want to get out of their homes before early mandatory evacuations. He asked visitors to end their vacations and leave the area very soon. According to a new UN report, Syrian forces have made regular use of chemical weapons. Correspondent Bill Zimfer has more.
In fact, UN war crimes investigators say Syrian forces have used chemical weapons 33 times, including 7 times between March 1st and July 7th of this year. Of the 33, 27 were attributed to the government of President Bashar al-Assad. The perpetrators were not determined in the 6 other attacks. The Assad regime has repeatedly denied using chemical weapons. Bill Zimfer, NBC News Radio.
And finally, President Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping are discussing North Korea's latest nuclear test. The White House said the two leaders talked on the phone today and condemned the regime's September 3rd test of a powerful nuclear device, calling it a provocative and destabilizing action. They called North Korea's current path dangerous to the world and not in its own interest. President Trump and Xi pledged to strengthen coordination and take further action towards the goal of denuclearizing the Korean Peninsula. The September 3rd test was North Korea's 6th nuclear test to date and caused a magnitude 6.3 earthquake. And now your fascinating fact for the day. Al Capone's oldest brother was a policeman in Nebraska. Reporting for Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Nick Tom.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris, my guest, founder of the Ruth Institute, author of 4 books, and she's spoken around the world on marriage, family, human sexuality. You've heard her on this program many times. You can follow up on her work at ruthinstitute.org. Jennifer, good to have you here. Thanks.
Thanks. It's so great to be in the studio with you.
Yeah, this is, we've talked for years.
I
think
know.
This is the first time you've been here.
Yes,
in the studio.
That's true.
Yeah.
And do you know what? You interviewed me on the very first book I ever wrote, Love and Economics,
I remember.
Back in 2001. Oh, I remember it too. I remember it very well. A lot's happened since then.
Yeah, a lot has happened. And back in the early 90s, mid 90s, with the so-called militia movement that was going on, Southern Poverty Law Center began at that time taking a look at some of these weekend warrior groups. Now, some of them were bad news, but a lot of them were recreational groups, basically middle class white guys on the weekend getting together, they're conservative politically. But they painted the entire bunch of them with this broad brush. It simply didn't work. Years later, and I wrote to them, and in fact interviewed them, talked to them about it, they wouldn't back off. They wanted to speak in broad categories. Now the Southern Poverty Law Center has gone ahead and claimed, apparently, that groups that oppose... So you can explain to me what this is, but I'm assuming it's because groups who oppose same-sex so-called marriage are in some way considered hate groups. Is that what it is? What
well,
is it?
I know I'm considered an anti-LGBT group.
Okay, that's you.
Okay, so that's me. Well, that's Family Research Council, a few groups like that. And what they do is say that we're defaming people. And the way they do that is they go pick through your writings and find one sentence here or one sentence there that sounds like you're saying something mean,
right,
and ignore the whole corpus of what you have to say and the context of even that particular remark.
Yeah.
So what we did recently when this came out in the news just a couple of weeks ago, in the aftermath of Charlottesville, this map, this hate map, became newsworthy again, you know, and so people started saying, oh, look, there's this little group in San Diego, the Ruth Institute. What are they all about? You know, and so we started getting some attention.
Yeah.
We went and took the articles and podcasts and things that somebody had found objectionable at one time or another, and we put it on one page of our website, and that page is called Where's the Hate?
Okay.
And you can get to that if you go to the Ruth Institute website. We have one of those rotating carousels on the homepage.
Yeah.
And one of the images has two little boys quarreling, and it says, Where's the Hate? And if you click on that, it'll take you to this page where there are, you know, the speeches or whatever it was that I did or said or wrote that they thought was objectionable. You can look for yourself and listen for yourself, and you can decide whether this organization belongs on the same list with the Ku Klux Klan. And that's all I'm going to do. I'm not going to get into it with these people.
Yeah.
You know, that just doesn't, that's not a good use of my time, you know.
I understand what you mean by that. It's like touching the tar baby. I mean, you can't.
Exactly.
You know, it's hard to get away from it once you do it.
That's right.
Will you do any litigation?
That's not my intention to do
any
litigation. I know that there is one organization that's doing a defamation suit against them, and that is James Kennedy's old organization, Coral Ridge Ministries.
Yeah, down in Fort Lauderdale.
Someplace in Florida, that's right.
Yeah, I read
so
that.
They're doing that, and I don't have any plan to do any litigation. And, you know, defamation would be one kind of suit, you know, that might be worth thinking about.
Yeah.
The you're discriminating against us kind of suit, I would not be doing that because I feel like my position is that people should be allowed to not do business with somebody for any reason they want. So I'm not saying Vanco's being unjust or mean or, you know, Wells Fargo's out of, you know, they can do what they want. You know, they're private businesses, they can do what they want. But I at the same time, I think that the Christian bakers and florists and photographers should also be allowed to do what they want,
right,
you know, and to say we don't care to participate and do business with this organization or person or, you know, whatever it might be. So I wouldn't get into that. I can't imagine a case where I would be interested in doing that.
Sure.
But,
sure.
Yeah.
Were you surprised? Did they get this notice from Vanco?
Oh, absolutely.
I can imagine.
Oh, my gosh. Now, here's what happened. My colleague who set up the account with them, she received an email, and that email came in at 2:01 precisely on Thursday. Thursday happened to have been August 31st. And she forwarded it to me right away, and the notice said, I forget exactly what it said, but we have it in our press release. We quoted verbatim in our press release, which people can read on the Ruth Institute media page.
Mm-hmm.
But it basically said, we're going to end our service with you as of August 31st because of what you read a minute ago. You're doing hate, violence, harassment, abuse, you know, whatever. And so we go, oh, well, that's kind of surprising. So we went and looked at our server, you know, I looked at our website to see, well, what does our donation thing look like? And it was already shut down.
Wow.
It was already shut down. So evidently they had shut it down before they even sent the email.
Even before the notice.
That's right.
Wow.
That's right. So, you know, no notice, no conversation, you know, no nothing. Just, okay, well, all right, that's the way you guys are going to play it. I mean, you know, what are we going to do at that point? So,
well, this group does business with a lot of nonprofits, a lot of Christian organizations.
Well, they market themselves to churches. You know, I mean, earlier today I was on the radio with Lutheran Public Radio, my friend Pastor Todd Wilkin, you know, and talking to him about it. And I said, you know, look, if Vanco is shutting me down for this reason, they could shut down any Missouri Synod Lutheran pastor who might be using this for their, you know, monthly donations or whatever it is. You know, they could shut down anybody on the same basis. So it's a little bit, it's a little disconcerting, and, you know, honestly, Al, it was rude
Yeah, that's true. That's,
you know,
that is
just,
true.
It was rude. It's like, you know, come on, you guys have a little class, you know. I mean, I don't know. You just don't do that to people.
Right, right.
So, but, I mean, if you think you can be rude to your political opponents, then the next thing you know, you're going to be, you know, doing other things that are worse than rude.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's part of the breakdown of civil society, I think, that that a established business like that would behave in that way.
Yeah, and you wonder, what is the best way to counter that kind of thing? I mean, you can write, and you can say, you know, I think you guys made a mistake here. I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. I think you've made a mistake. If they don't respond, then you can ignore them. That's a perfectly legitimate way to do it, too. Another way would be to get a hold of National Association of Evangelicals or U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops and let them know that VANCO has this kind of attitude towards those who oppose same-sex so-called marriage or whatever.
Or whatever their reasoning is.
Whatever the reasoning is, because it's not entirely clear to me. I mean,
it's not clear to me why they flagged us today. Why now? You know, I suppose it's because that we were in the news because of the Charlottesville business. But you know, we've been doing business with VANCO for 2 years. We've been on that hate map since 2013.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
We've been on that. And have you heard of all the riots we've caused, Al, or all the violent acts that have taken place because of Ruth Institute propaganda and incitement and so on?
Yeah,
I mean,
you know,
I haven't heard of a single such incident.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah.
Here you go. I mean, we're just going to have to step it up if we want to keep our status as a hate group because we're just not getting it done.
Well, it'd be nice if we can get access to Southern Poverty Law Center's growth in revenue and how that actually came about. I have deep suspicions that this is really has a lot to do with fundraising. There's an extraordinary sea of hatred out there towards politically conservative organizations, especially Christian-based organizations.
Yes.
Because the idea is that we believe we have the truth on this, and those people who have the truth are willing to be hateful towards others. They're willing to impose their views on others, and we better stop them now before they cause us any more trouble.
Is that what they're saying about us?
I think that's what they're saying. Yeah, I think that's what they're saying.
Right.
I mean, I think that's what
they're
saying.
You know, if you think about it, the Catholic Church is the last group on earth that is literally saying you don't get to do anything you want sexually. And the Catholic Church, over its 2,000-year history, we have gotten in trouble with the powers that be all the time because we're always telling rich and powerful people, hey, you don't get to do whatever you feel like.
Yeah.
You know? So this is just the current version of that problem.
I agree. And that's actually, in my mind, one of the reasons to be Catholic, too, is that you do have a state. We take institutional life seriously. We expect to be here in the next century. So hold it there. We'll come back in just a minute with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris.
When we talk about music and education, there's some research that has been done to show that music in various ways can improve your IQ. Dr. Frances Rauscher, behavioral psychologist, she did this experiment where she took university students and played different music for them and then tested their IQ to see if the music could affect their performance on IQ test. And she would play the music and then test them. And she found that after listening to the double piano concertos, the students would score 10% or so increase.
This is Henry Root, your host for Putting On the Mind of Christ. On our program this week, Andrew Pudor returns with two talks from the Michigan Catholic Home Educators Conference. On the first, he discusses the importance of music education on brain growth. We follow that with highlights from his writing seminar. Join us for Putting on the Mind of Christ this Sunday afternoon at 3, encoring Saturday afternoons at 6 on 990 WDEO, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popcha.
Sports, lessons, classes. Can you guess the best activity for kids to sign up for? It's family life. Extracurricular activities are nice, but not nearly as necessary as time with mom, dad, and siblings. Research shows that parents who prioritize regular time to work, play, talk, and pray together, emphasizing simple activities like family meals, family chores, a regular family prayer time, game nights, family days out, have happier, better behaved, more well-adjusted kids than parents who sacrifice daily family time to various activities. Don't let the village raise your kids. Step up and reclaim your family life. For tons of great ideas on family rituals, check out my book, Discovering God Together, The Catholic Guide to Raising Faithful Kids. I'm Dr. Greg Popcheck, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Fully Alive. Reflections on the scripture readings of today's Mass with Father Pat Egan, Chaplain of Ave Maria Radio.
Today's Gospel shows Jesus in action. And remember, he is the same now as he was then. We hear how Jesus is delighted at his cures. God wants to bless us in our day also, so be sure to ask him to bless you and whatever you need. But God is God. Sometimes he has gifts to give us that are different from the ones we ask for. Trust him anyway. Jesus left the synagogue and entered Simon's house. And Simon's mother-in-law was ill with a high fever, and they besought him for her. And Jesus stood over her, rebuked the fever, and it left her. And immediately she rose and served them. At sunset, all those who had any that were sick brought them to him, laid his hands on every one of them and healed them. And demons came out of many, crying, "You're the Son of God." And Jesus rebuked them and not allow them to speak, because they knew he was the Christ, and there wasn't time to release that news just yet. And when it was day, he departed and went into a lonely place, a place alone. But the people sought him out and came to him. They would have kept him from leaving him, but he said to them, "I must preach the good news of the kingdom of God to the other cities also. For that purpose I was sent." And so, right down the line, his saving gospel has come to us today, a long way from Palestine. I'm Father Pat Egan, chaplain to Ave Maria Radio, commenting on the readings read today at Mass. You can reach on 734-930-3257. And remember, inspired by the word of God, you can be more fully alive.
Well, good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. With me is Dr. Jennifer Rulak Morris, founder of the Ruth Institute. And she's in town today, and we're just talking about some recent developments. The organization that processes her donations, the organization for the Ruth Institute, donations for the Ruth Institute have decided to not do that anymore, and on the grounds that the Ruth Institute is, what exactly did they say?
Let's see, I think we're promoting hate, violence, harassment, and abuse, something like that.
And do they footnote you anywhere on this?
No. As far as I can tell, they haven't looked at our website. Nobody ever contacted us. Nobody from the Southern Poverty Law Center ever contacted us. Nobody from Wells Fargo ever contacted us. Nobody from Vanco ever contacted us. So I don't know. Well, I mean, I can guess what they're thinking, but, you see, these are the people who have, I mean, not Vanco, but the whole sexual revolutionary left, Al, they have redefined so many terms to make them expansive so that they can criminalize certain activities. So violence now includes using the wrong pronoun to a person who identifies as a different gender than the gender of their body.
Yeah.
If that's considered an act of violence, now you've expanded the definition of violence so much that an ordinary statute wouldn't cover that act, but you've got now a new tool called hate or incitement or something like that that you can use to enforce ideological conformity.
Yeah.
And that's really what, to me, this is one piece of that whole effort to create conformity around a bunch of issues where the lifestyle left is completely off the rails. They're completely wrong.
Let's talk about this, because there's those of us who have been living through this and working, you know, in this field of, I don't know what you want to call it, cultural apologetics or cultural war, trying to understand the relationship between the natural law and our culture. One of the things we've noticed is that there are strange allies here. You have groups that are obviously politically driven, this Antifa-type group. These are far leftist groups. They're anarchist groups. They're Maoists. They're Trotskyites. I've known them for years because of my work with Operation Rescue many years ago now. They were there. They were there in Seattle. They were there in Wall Street. They were there in Charlottesville. And finally, CNN, the New York Times are doing... I mean, Nancy Pelosi has finally come out and acknowledged that they're violent. Got that kind of group. You have liberals who simply think that the United States has been a nation that has propped itself up on the labor of slaves and has taken advantage of people in the third world, and that we have some sort of debt to pay to the world. You've got bohemian activists from the beatniks to the hippies to the sexual revolutionaries and ideological feminists. They crisscross one another. They support one another. But there's no single White House for this movement. What keeps them working together? I mean, they're even supporting Islam today when, in fact, Islam clearly teaches against homosexuality.
I think the thing that holds them together is their desire for power. And these ideas are things where if you are in power, if you have power, you'll get more power. Okay, so if you can make everybody say Bruce Jenner is a woman, that's a lot of power for the government. That's a lot of power for the ideologues who are generating the pressure to do that, you know?
The power to define is the power to control.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right. And so by creating more and definitions of things that are at odds with the natural law, all of those things have to be continually reinforced and supported because they don't defend themselves. They don't support themselves. So, you know, you and I believe that men and women are different and that there's such a thing as men and such a thing as women.
Yes.
And our worldview can accommodate the fact that some people are born with chromosomal abnormalities or various kinds of intersex condition. That doesn't upset us, right? Well, you deal with a person like that, and deal with them compassionately in an individualized way for whatever's going to work for them in their particular situation. But the ideologues have grabbed onto those people and said, see here, there really is no gender binary.
Right.
There really isn't such a thing as male and female. Therefore, what exactly follows from that? Well, the end game, one of the end games is certainly the removal of anything having to do with male and female from the law and from society. So it's already happened, for example, in California. I'm pretty sure I told you this, year, Al, that one day I woke up and realized I no longer had a husband. Because nothing untoward had happened to Mr. Morse, but Jerry Brown had removed from the legal code of California the words husband and wife, mother and father, and replaced those with generic gender-neutral words.
Yeah.
That is one of the purposes of redefining marriage as a genderless institution, is that now you have to remove all that from the law. That's why genderless marriage or so-called gay marriage, that's why that was important to this whole ideological coalition, because then they could break down the gender binary. They could break down the idea that men and women are different and that needs to be recognized by society in some way. So that's one of the main end games, I would say, at least of the sexual revolutionary side of all this. What the Antifa people are up to, I couldn't begin to say.
I'm speculating here. I'm just wondering out loud.
But it is interesting that what all these people have in common is that they do not believe that there is any standard higher than power.
Yeah.
Right? And so whether you're an anarchist who believes that there's no such thing as law, whether you're a sexual revolutionary who believes there's no such that the human body is insignificant.
Yeah.
You know, all of those forms of ideological thought have the effect of consolidating power to whoever's got power. They're going to get more if these things are accepted. And the biggest barrier to those people succeeding is the last institution on earth that believes in natural law, that believes actually in reason,
yeah.
and that's the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
And we've got our work cut out for us,
yeah.
don't we, Al?
Yeah, indeed. And it is funny. I mean, this is, in the history of ideas, a lot of times this is brought back. It's considered to be Nietzschean, and then Michel Foucault was greatest disciple. Again, always talking that truth claims are really power claims.
That's right.
You know.
Oh, and see, they've taken reality and turned it on its head.
Right.
Because if you believe in truth, even the poorest guy sleeping in the gutter under a bridge, he can have access to truth. And he can go into court and he can say, this is what really happened.
Right.
And if everybody believes in truth, they can go, hey, you know what? This poor guy, he may be a slob, but he's got a point.
Right.
And he's right. And, you know, you guys, all you rich guys, you know, stand down and leave the guy alone. You know, whatever it is. That's the reality of the situation. And the fact is, if you take away truth as a meaningful reality, if you
Absolutely.
Undermine reality, it's the poor, it's the weak. That's who gets undermined by it,
That's
not
right.
the rich,
yeah.
not the already powerful. That's completely crazy.
Yeah, truth will make you free, because the weakest person who has the truth, it can leverage that against institutions.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. And, you know, that's one of the fallacies of equality, the way equality has morphed in our culture. Equality has turned into kind of a bludgeoning tool to make people behave the way you want them to behave, so that who's ever in charge, you know, can say, well, these are the things we want to be equal today. Today we want same-sex couples and opposite-sex couples to be equal, and so therefore everybody has to do what we say. But in the meantime, other people have been made less equal.
Yeah.
So children are less equal under that set of arrangements. But nobody cares about that.
Yeah.
Right? Nobody cares about the fact that some children now have a legally recognized right to know both their parents, and other children don't.
No, right.
No, wait a second. So the truth is, you can't be equal in every way for every person. That's not possible.
No.
So a better principle of justice rather than equality, a better principle is defend the weak. Defend the weak. And that's what the church has always said. That's what Jesus has always said.
Yep.
In no uncertain terms, defend the weak.
Yeah. Yeah. This is part of our DNA. I mean, it goes right back to St. Paul saying after the Jerusalem Council, what they told us is that we needed to care for the poor, which is what we wanted to do anyways.
Right.
You know.
That's right.
So I mean, that is the church's way of approaching inequality.
That's right.
It's to defend those who are weak, poor, marginalized, oppressed, disenfranchised.
Babies.
Yeah.
Babies. Okay, so think about the pro-life movement. Think about what we have to deal with in the pro-life movement. We say defend the weak, defend the infant, because they're weak and they have no one to speak for them. That's the position of the church. That's the position of, you know, the church broadly speaking, small c Catholic Church.
Yeah.
All of our Lutheran brothers
yep.
think that and everything.
That's right.
But on the other side, what we're facing are people who say women cannot be economically equal to men unless they can control their fertility. The Supreme Court said that. I mean, the Supreme Court has said that multiple times. So, on one hand, you have people in power, and I would say the Supreme Court has power, right?
Yeah, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And they are staffed with graduates of the Ivy Leagues, the
mm-hmm.
most powerful, influential institutions in America, and they are creating a world where elite Ivy League women can be the equal to elite Ivy League men, but everybody else can be left in the dust,
yeah.
especially the weakest. The unborn baby and the child who may have some kind of disability.
Yeah.
You know? So the contrast between defend the weak and equality, it just couldn't be starker. And that I think we have to, that's where I would, you know, start drawing the
yeah.
line. And that's
yeah.
why we at the Ruth Institute, Al, you know, I have finally come to the conclusion, or, you know, sort of figured out that the best way to see this is that to look at the whole sexual revolution from the perspective of the child.
I think that's brilliant.
See,
right.
The child, all of these people, you mentioned Foucault.
Yeah.
You can read all of his stuff all day long if you have the, if you can.
It's an exercise.
Yeah, right. But you will never find him talking about children. You will never find Simone de Beauvoir talking about children. You will not find, going all the way back to Engels. They don't have anything to say about children.
Yeah.
They're all about either sexual liberation or equality between men and women. That's all it's about. And so the interests of children are completely set aside. And in a sense, that's the craziest thing ever, because the most equal thing in the whole world is the fact that everybody's a baby. Absolutely. Everybody is born.
We've all been there.
We've all been there. So what kind of a world would you want to be a child in?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we have a world where, okay, women are equal to men. Isn't that great? Oh, I don't care whether I'm a man or a woman now. It's so wonderful. But what world would you like to be a child in?
Yeah. Hold it there. We'll come back. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris, my guest. I'm Al Cresta.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten in part by Charity Mobile. Communication is critical. And in today's world, your cellular service is your lifeline to family and friends. Ave Maria Radio and Charity Mobile are partners in communicating the most important message of all, the good news of Jesus Christ. Charity Mobile is a provider of cellular LTE phones and service and has been a proud supporter of Ave Maria Radio and other pro-life causes for more than 10 years. More information at charitymobile.com. Charity Mobile. Charity begins at phone.
Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you in part by the Ave Maria Mutual Funds, investment funds that are designed and screened to be pro-life and pro-family. Six different Ave Maria Mutual Funds are available to help you reach your long-term investment objectives, smart investing, and Catholic values. The number to learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds is 866-AVE-MARIA. That's 866-283-6274 or at AveMariaFunds.com.
Come out and enjoy summer before it's gone. St. Charles in Newport, located 1 mile east of Exit 21 on I-75, is having their parish festival from Friday, September 8th to Sunday, September 10th. Come and enjoy live entertainment, delicious food and craft beer, a huge rummage sale, softball tournament, and much, much more. Visit the parish website at stcharlesnewport.org for more information. That's stcharlesnewport.org. See you there.
Discover what others say about Franciscan University of Steubenville. Forbes ranks Franciscan University in the top 10% of all U.S. colleges. U.S. News and World Report puts Franciscan in the top tier of Midwest colleges. And the Cardinal Newman Society says Franciscan University provides a faithful Catholic education. Discover a university that is academically excellent and passionately Catholic. Discover Franciscan University of Steubenville. Find out more at franciscan.edu.
It's that time again. The fall membership drive for Ave Maria Radio is September 11th through the 15th. And if you ever wonder what it's like to see it for your own eyes, you can volunteer to make this drive successful. If you can spare just a couple of hours during any of the days of the drive, that's September 11th through the 15th, you can give us a call right now, 877-288-1077, or email our volunteer director, Cheryl, to volunteer at avemariaradio.net.
You like Butkus better. Spike's your favorite. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. Have you ever heard this one? Basically, little Fauntleroy is accusing you of playing parental favorites. He gets disciplined more than his brother or his sister, and you'd have to admit he does. But he does because he does more things to get disciplined for. You know this, but he doesn't recognize that, so he accuses you of playing favorites. He accuses you of liking chastity more than you like him. And you tell him, if you didn't do those things, you wouldn't get disciplined either. Chastity doesn't do those things. That's why I have to discipline you more. If you acted like chastity, and he looks at you like, yeah, right, tell me another parenting story. Remember this, Mom and Dad. If you have more than one child, they will require different amounts of discipline. The nature of the beast. Will the kids understand this? No. If you want to make things disciplinarily fair, what you need to do is discipline each child with consequences when they earn it. If you're worried that one child is getting disciplined more than another, balance the scale by hugging and kissing that child and loving them up more often. But don't balance it by cutting back on your discipline to make it fair. That's ultimately not fair to the child who behaves better. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi.
And good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. With me, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris, founder of the Ruth Institute. She's in town today meeting with a small group of friends here, helping us understand the extent of the work of the Ruth Institute. And we should say at the beginning, people need to go to the website.
Yes.
And find out what you're doing.
Yes, yes. People can sign up for our newsletter. It's very easy. It's free. That's how you stay in touch with what we're doing. We told people today, newsletter went out, we asked people to send a nice little note to Vanco.
Yeah.
You can also follow us on Facebook. We have the Ruth Institute Facebook page. Come over. There's always activity over there. And then finally, I'd really appreciate it if people just send us some money.
Sure.
You know, write us a check at the bottom of the website.
Of course.
You'll see our address there, and you can mail in a check. You don't have to worry about any processing or anything like that. And our nice little bank in Louisiana, nice little Cajun local bank, they will be happy to cash those checks. No questions asked. It'll be fine, you know. So we would really appreciate that. I mean, it's really going up against the SPLC. I mean, we're not. I don't perceive myself going against them.
No.
But they've come against me, and you know, it's really a David and Goliath kind of thing.
Well, this is a group that just looking over a piece here. Let me pull it out. We got it.
It's Carl Zinsmeister's
Carl Zinsmeister's piece in the Philanthropy Roundtable. This is an organization that, again, monitors various foundations and philanthropic institutions. And looking at this, apparently in 1986, there was a major change in purpose. The Southern Poverty Law Center moved from being a civil rights type organization to being a pursuer of extremist organizations, and trying to come up with lists of who they count as dangerous in extremist organizations, haters, extremists. And it still, however, presents itself as a public interest law firm, and yet Carl Zinsmeister here says they do shockingly little litigation, only small amounts on behalf of aggrieved individuals. Its two largest expenses are propaganda operations, creating its annual list of haters and extremists, and running a big effort that pushes tolerance education through more than 400,000 public school teachers. And the single biggest effort undertaken by the Southern Poverty Law Center fundraising, that's their biggest work, is influencing public school teachers in this tolerance education program. It spent $10 million on direct fundraising expenses, according to its 990 form of 2015, far more than it's ever spent on legal services. And then in 2015, it vacuumed up $50 million in contributions and foundation grants, a tidy addition to its $334 million holdings of cash and securities. Its headquarters is worth $34 million. This is an incredibly well-endowed organization.
Yes, and they're accumulating their contributions, and I can assure you that the Ruth Institute is not accumulating assets. I looked it up one time. I think Morris Dees, I think his salary is more than my entire budget.
I would believe that.
You know?
Yeah, he's the only one. The entire legal staff, according to Carl Zinsmeister, his entire legal staff left when they changed their purpose back in 1986. He's the only one that stayed on. So, this is an organization that is making its mission the ginning up moral indignation against organizations that they perceive as extremist or hateful. They have no clear public criteria to judge what constitutes hate, or they would never be able to be focusing on groups like the Ruth Institute or Family Research Council. You have a man on your board, a pastor.
Yes, Pastor Walter Hoy
is a
leader in the pro-life movement in the African-American community.
Yeah.
And we've worked together on a whole variety of projects over the years, the pro-life issues and so on. And the Washington Times interviewed him this morning, and he said, you know what, my grandfather was lynched by the KKK. And the Ruth Institute has nothing to do with the KKK. This is completely ridiculous. So it was in the Washington Times that he said that, and I'm pretty sure we have that posted on our Facebook page. But no, you know, Reverend Hoy, as a pro-life leader, he comes into the crosshairs of a lot of these sexual revolutionaries who want you to believe that that the pro-choice, pro-abortion movement is helping poor people. And, you know, Walter wants to say we're aborting. The largest cause of death in the black community is abortion. Yeah. It's bigger than all the other, you know, top 10 causes combined, you know, is abortion. And so he's trying to deal with that. And he doesn't have a big budget like what the Southern Poverty Law Center has. He doesn't have anything like that. You know, and when he puts up billboards saying endangered species with a cute little black baby picture on it, you know, too many aborted, those type of things, when he puts up those billboards, the pro-abortion people go bananas on him, you know. So the ironies here of a so-called civil rights organization coming after a pro-life organization, coming after a pro-marriage organization, there are many ironies. And you know, another irony here is that if you were to pick out a African-American pastor at random in the United States, just randomly choose African-American pastors, or just African-American people for that matter, and ask them, what do you think of gay marriage? On average, their position would be closer to my position than the position of the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Absolutely.
No question about it. And many of them are deeply resentful of the moral authority of their civil rights movement, for which some people died, that being hijacked for the sake of gay rights.
Yeah.
You know, they do not agree with that. And you know, talk about the strange allies and strange bedfellows. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. I did some actual counting on this a few weeks ago. In the decade of the 60s, about 36 people actually lost their lives over the civil rights issue. I'm not just talking about injured. I'm talking about people who actually lost their lives. They were dead as a result of it. It's not just the three, workers from the summer of 1964. You had 36 people. That's a lot of people.
Yes.
To die, and I think we should keep in mind that we're living in a time in which a lot of attention is being paid to trying to generate moral indignation, to get people to feel incensed and outraged. It's one of the things that the mainstream press loves to do.
Yes.
And, you know, regardless of what one thinks of President Trump, what you can say about CNN is that it has decided to treat the Trump White House as a disaster story. And so it's handling it. About 90% of its day has been going to the Trump White House, which is about what they did when the Malaysian flight disappeared. They did it for 40 days. So we're living in a very difficult time. Truth is hard to come by, and it has to be gotten patiently. We need patience. Your work on victims of the sexual revolution, tell people about that project.
Well, the way we look at it is that the sexual revolution has been a humanitarian disaster. You know, that millions of people have been harmed by the deconstruction of the family and the deconstruction of sexual mores and sexual restraints. It promised fun and freedom, but in fact it did not live up to its promise whatsoever.
Right.
And because of this idea that you're talking about of moral indignation, always stoking up moral indignation, that's part of what keeps the sexual revolution alive, is people feeling like, you know, they've been cheated or they've been gypped or, you know, they've been wronged in some way. And so that hides the fact that the sexual revolution itself is causing lots of harm and lots of pain and lots of victims. And in fact, the victims of the sexual revolution are not allowed to speak out, generally. You know, if you think about some of the people who've been harmed, just the most obvious group from the pro-life perspective is the post-abortive woman. The pro-abortion people don't believe she exists, right?
Yeah.
They don't believe that there is such a thing as
right.
a woman being traumatized by abortion.
Right.
So if you were traumatized by abortion, that means you're socially invisible. You're not allowed to say anything about it. You can go to therapists, and they'll all tell you it has nothing to do with anything, and so on and so forth. And yet, in the professional literature, it has been known since the 1980s that at least 10% of women are traumatized by their abortions. Now, that's been known for a long time. So that's the pro-life movement has done well, I think, to point out the post-abortive woman, the woman who regrets her abortion, to say that this is not all it's cracked up to be. If you go further into the sexual revolution, you'll see, for example, the children of divorce. To me, that is the biggest single set of victims of the sexual revolution. And the number one lie of the sexual revolution is that kids are resilient. And adults can have any sexual activities they want with any partners they want, and the kids will be fine as long as the parents are happy. Well, you know what? Some of those kids have grown up, and they can tell you for themselves that that's not the case.
Right.
That's just not the case. And yet, socially, they're invisible. Socially, they're still not allowed to talk about it. You know, they're still not allowed to grieve. Right? It's like it's a form of disenfranchised grief.
Yeah.
So, at the Ruth Institute, we feel very strongly that it's an issue of justice to say people have been harmed and to give those people a voice. That's an issue of justice. That they are owed that. They are owed the truth. We talked earlier about the truth and how it sets you free and how it equalizes things.
Right.
So that is a very important aspect of calling attention to the victims of the sexual revolution. But also, if you could get those people activated, if you could just get 10% of the children of divorce who are now adults, if you could get them marching in the streets or the equivalent, we would have a movement. And that's what marriage needs. That's what we need, Al. We need a movement for marriage, a mass movement for marriage. And I think there are plenty of people out there. We've just got to get off the bench and get going. And that's what we're trying to do at the Ruth Institute.
What do you think keeps people from doing that? Because what you say is so true. What would keep people from gelling, you know, getting together and presenting themselves as, you know, those who have been harmed by it?
I think a lot of people don't want to deal with it because it's still very raw and very painful.
Yeah,
and, you know, now that we start talking about it, and a few other people now are starting to talk about it, you still hear from people that they get a lot of resistance from their family members. You know, if they say, you know, Mom, that really stunk for me when you got married the third time, you know, I wasn't happy for you. Love is fragile in the family, and so they don't want to threaten the love even more by saying, Mom, it stunk. You know, so that's part of what we're up against. But I would implore your listeners to get involved with what we're doing.
Okay.
We've got a blog for you.
We'll come back on the other side of the break and give the information again, okay?
Bingo.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris of the Ruth Institute, my guest. I'm Al Cresta.
Have you given up on your marriage, feeling frustrated, hurt, and lonely? Are you losing hope and believe there's nothing left to save? Well, it's time to breathe new life into your marriage. Retrovi can help. Let them show you how to rebuild a loving marriage relationship. The next Retrovi program in Michigan will begin with a weekend September 15th in Romulus. Visit helpourmarriage.com. You'll be glad you did. Again, that's helpourmarriage.com.
Recently, we all witnessed in horror the deadly attacks in London committed by so-called extremists. But as AFLC Advisory Board member Andy McCarthy wrote in a column published by National Review, no, the problem in London is not Islamist extremism. McCarthy noted that the British Prime Minister, duly and appropriately outraged, announced that her government is leading the international effort to take on and defeat what she described as the ideology of extremism. And, of course, she had to include the perfunctory disclaimer that this ideology, quote, is a perversion of Islam and a perversion of the truth, end quote. However, as McCarthy observed, there are gradations of extremism. Some Islamists are violent jihadists. Some support violent jihadists, but eschew violence themselves. But they all want Sharia. And if you want to live under the dictates of Sharia, then you are an Islamist and an extremist. As McCarthy concludes, the Prime Minister is half right. We are confronted with a dangerous ideology. But this ideology is Sharia supremacism, a mainstream ideology of Muslims around the globe. To limit our attention to violent jihadists is to remain willfully blind to what inspires the jihadists. That is what has to be confronted if we can overcome our political correctness. I'm Robert Buse, co-founder and senior counsel for the American Freedom Law Center, bringing you this Faith and Freedom Minute. You can learn more about the American Freedom Law Center and its fight for your faith and freedom by visiting our website and liking us on Facebook.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. With me, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris, founder of the Ruth Institute. Now, I want to make sure we've had talked about many things today, and I think people, again, need to be regularly in touch with the work that you're doing. You've done some of the most creative and insightful work in this area of pro-family work. How do people get in touch with you?
RuthInstitute.org.
Okay.
Sign up for our weekly newsletter, Ruth Institute's Facebook page. And one feature on our website that I would really invite people to check out is called the Tell Ruth the Truth blog. Okay, Tell Ruth the Truth is where people have the opportunity to submit their stories and tell us and tell the world what it was like for you when your husband ran off with the secretary, what it was like for you when your mom remarried the third time, what it was like for you when you participated in the hookup culture and you had an abortion, or you married somebody who was married to somebody else. And, you know, you would not believe some of the things people tell us. So it's your opportunity to anonymously share the truth that the sexual revolution has made hundreds of false promises. And we really want your participation. We need you to be part of what we're doing, everybody who's been harmed by the sexual revolution. And I know that there are a lot of people who return to the Catholic Church because they figure out that the Church was right all along.
Yeah, indeed. Thank you so much. Wonderful talking with you today, face-to-face, finally on the air like this, and in the studio here. And again, RuthInstitute.org. Make sure you get on over there, sign up, be part of the work that Jennifer is doing. We'll be back tomorrow for another edition of Crest in the Afternoon. Tonight, as I go off the air, Catholic Answers Live is coming on most of these stations. Father Vincent Serpa, Your Spiritual Life, and Carlo Broussard, The Biblical Blueprint for the Papacy.
Crest in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. The executive producer is Nick Tom. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
Why are the Psalms such an important form of prayer? The Psalms extend from the time of King David to the coming of the Messiah. They express both communal and individual prayer, evidencing a deepening in prayer for oneself and others. The Catholic Catechism says the Psalms were gradually collected into five books known as the Psalter, or Praises. They are considered the masterwork of prayer in the Old Testament. The Psalms both commemorate the promises God has kept and anticipate the Messiah who will fulfill them definitively. Jesus both prayed the Psalms and fulfilled them. The Psalms remain essential to the prayer of the Church. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism. For more minutes, go to the archive at AveMariaRadio.net.
The Ave Maria Communications Guild invites you to activate your faith, enjoy a meal, and get your questions answered at Alpha, beginning at Christ the King in Ann Arbor on Sunday, September 10th. This free, informal gathering allows the curious to share their thoughts in a pressure-free environment. So bring a friend. Register at ctkcc.net/alpha or call